Inshallah, now I would like to call our second Muqarrir, Hazrat Maulana Basharat Ali Khan Sahib, Dawud Barakatum, to come and share with us his words of wisdom, inshallah. Maulana Basharat Ali Khan.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi wa kafa wa salamun ala ibadihi alladhi nastafa. Amma ba'd, fa'udhu billahi min ash-shaytani rajim. Bismillahi ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. والذين جاهدوا فينا لنهدينهم سبلنا سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. I really feel embarrassed to be on the chair when all of you are sitting down. I don't know if... Okay. With your permission, I'll be over here. I'm also feel embarrassed to be in the presence of the ulama here, these muftis and real alims in your presence. But as a khidmat to all of you, I'll share some of the things that I've learned from my teachers, inshallah ta'ala. So the topic that I was given is to talk a little bit about mu'amilat. But first I want to give a little background of what it means and how it's related to our life. So in the Sharia, as Muslims, we are followers of the Sharia. So the Sharia is composed partly of fiqh. And one aspect of fiqh is the fiqh of mu'amilat. And the fiqh are, the different subjects that have to be known by every Muslim. For example, the ibadat, that's another, subset of fiqh. And ibadat has to be learned by every single Muslim, right? How to pray, how to fast, when and how much to give zakat, when is a person mukallaf, when is a person necessary to have to go to hajj, and when they go for hajj, they have to know the rituals and the obligations of hajj, so on and so forth. So these are the ibadat. Right? There's also the fiqh of mu'ashir, how to treat one's family members. And I think Maulana Zaya talked about that in the earlier session. One other important aspect of fiqh is mu'amilat, how to deal particularly with financial transactions, how to deal with other members of society. Now, why is this? Why do we have this in the Sharia? Right? If you look at, for example, in Christianity, there's not much about mu'amilat. If you look at many other religions, they don't have much to say about mu'amilat. So let me take a step back. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created us, He said to the angels, بَعْدَ نَسْتَعِذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ وَإِذْ قَالَ رَبُّكَ لِلْمَلَائِكَةِ إِنِّي جَاعِلٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ خَلِيفَةٌ. That when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expressed His intention to create mankind, He said to the angels that I want to make a khalifa on the earth, a vicegerent. Somebody who represents My Sharia, I want to put that species on the earth. So we all know the story that the angels, made an ishkal, right? That these people will shed blood, and why would you do this? And so they had a question, they had an ishkal, and Allah Subhanahu wa Taala responded. But this ayah in Surah Al-Baqarah, it expresses that our purpose on the earth is as khulafa to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that's not a small task. That's not a menial task. Right? That we are here to implement and enforce the laws of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And what are the laws of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? These are rules that implement justice. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is just, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is wise, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is loving, because He is most forgiving and merciful, He wants those qualities to be implemented on earth. And there's no other reason. Right? There's no other reason for the Sharia. And as the poet mentioned in the poem that we heard, that those people who follow the Prophet ﷺ, those are the true human beings. If we don't implement the Sharia, then we'll be no different than animals. Right? Because the animals, they follow their desires. And it is the animals that do whatever they want to do. But and they don't care whether they oppress others. They have no care whether they deny other animals' rights. They will do what they need to do to survive. That's the animalistic world. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made us, this species of human beings, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made us special. He has given us fadl over other creatures. Because we have the ability and the opportunity to take the Sharia and bring justice in this land. And that can only happen with the Sharia of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Right? So that is the goal that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has for human beings. Right? And if they don't do that, then again, we're no better than animals. So in order to do that, in order to bring Sharia onto this earth, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us this responsibility, but He's also given us a lot of rights. Like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions in the Quran, وَسَخَّرَ لَكُمْ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا مِّنْ Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has subjugated the entire earth and the entire heaven for us, for human beings. Meaning that we have the opportunity to take advantage of everything that is on this earth and everything that's in the universe. Why do we have this amazing right? Because we have this amazing responsibility. Right? For example, if a person is made king over a country, then he is given the power of the armed forces of that country. Why does he have that honor to be commander-in-chief of the armed forces? Because he has that amazing responsibility to implement the defense of that country. So we have the amazing responsibility to make sure there's justice and peace on this earth. Because of that, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us the right and the right to everything on this earth. To all the wealth that is available on this earth. All the minerals that are here, the vegetation, the animals, the gold, the silver, every piece, every opportunity for wealth that's on this earth and even in the heavens is available to us. وَسَخَّرَ لَكُمْ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ جَمِيعًا مِّنْ Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us this amazing wealth. Right? So that we can bring justice on this earth. So, the issue is, that now we have this amazing wealth on this earth that's worth, billions, trillions of dollars worth of wealth. But we also have, 7 billion people on this earth. So how are we going to distribute it? Right? And there are many, many obstacles in order to figure out who gets what and who is entitled to what. So now, there's different ways to think about it. One can say, okay, let's take all of this wealth, let's break it down and make it easier. Let's say in a particular country. A particular country has a certain GDP. A particular country has a certain amount of wealth. Right? Let's say $1 trillion. So now they can say, well, let's distribute it equally. Everyone gets a piece of the same piece of the pie. Right? And that's sort of what communism tries to do. Communism, it says that the government will take over everything and they will distribute it as they see fit. And they'll try to distribute it in an equal manner. That's one way to look at it. Right? The other way to look at it is to say that no, certain people deserve more wealth than others. Why? Because they work harder, because they have better ideas, right? Whereas other people, they might not work as hard. They might not have better ideas, right? So we should reward people for working hard. We should reward people for taking risk. We should reward people for having great ideas. Right? And that's a valid point, because if in a society that's not rewarded, then progress is stagnant.
You don't have that much progress.
If you tell somebody, you know, if somebody in a particular country has a great idea, right? For example, you take a person, if a person develops an amazing phone, right? Or an iPad, or something like an iPad, an amazing tablet. He has a great idea, right? But the country that he's living in says, you know, it doesn't matter what you do with that idea, you're still going to get paid the same amount as a person who's just sitting at home. Then he's going to say, well, what's the point? What's the point of going through all of that work, trying to design the idea, to develop the idea, to manufacture that idea, to bring that idea into fruition, and to invest that initial capital in that idea, and bring it into manufacturing and production? That takes a lot of work. So he's going to say, well, what's the point? I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do it. And that's a valid point. So capitalism says that, no, we should reward people for that. And that's basically the system that we live in this country. That in this country, if a person has a great idea, if a person works hard, then they will be rewarded. Ideally, right? The other part of capitalism is that, the unfortunate part of capitalism is that wealth distribution is not optimal. That there is a lot of disparity between the people who, for example, cannot work, for people who might not have great ideas or that are disadvantaged in certain ways, and those people who are advantaged. Right? Those people who have the ability to work hard, right? They might have a better education because they're living in a better place, right? So the wealth disparity the gap becomes wider and wider and wider, right? So that's the problem with capitalism. So now with in the Sharia, in Islam, there's this concept of Islamic economics, and there's a lot of research that has gone. You know, hundreds and hundreds of papers have been published, both in the Islamic world and in the Western world, looking at Islamic economics, right? The Islam mu'amilat. How does Islam deal with this? Because we have the duty as Muslims to develop an economic system in which everyone is treated justly and fairly. That everyone has an opportunity to have that piece of the pie. Right? So in Islam, the ideal is a type of capitalism, right, in which people who have great ideas and that work hard, they are rewarded. But there are significant differences, right? And those differences, is that in this system of the Western system of capitalism, there's a lot of injustice that happens, right? I'll get into that, but there's a lot of injustice that occurs. For example, in interest, in gharar, in insurance, things like this. Concepts like these introduce a lot of injustice in the system, right? So what Islam says about mu'amilat is that whatever a country decides, an Islamic country, they can make specific laws and regulations. But there are explicit principles that have to be in place to make sure there is no injustice in the land. For example, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made haram zulm. And he says specifically towards the end of Surah Al-Baqarah, لَا تَظْلِمُونَ وَلَا تُظْلَمُونَ, that you should not oppress, nor should you be oppressed. Right? In another ayah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَأَحَلَّ اللَّهُ الْبَيْعَ وَحَرَّمَ الرِّبَى. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has made halal trade and transaction, but he has made haram riba. interest. Right? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in a hadith, it comes that monopolization is not allowed.
So this is an
idea where a person takes one commodity that society needs, and that person or entity hoards that commodity. Right? For example, if there is bread that comes into a city, you know, a village. So there's one person that says, I'm going to take all the bread, you know, and I'm going to produce all the bread in the city, and I'm going to jack up the prices. Right? You know, before there was competition, right? And bread used to be a dollar a pound. Now I'm going to, you know, eat up my competition and raise up the prices because the people don't have any other option. They have to buy bread from me. So I'm going to raise the price to $3 a pound.
Right? So that is monopolization.
And the Prophet ﷺ says in a hadith, "Man ihtakara fahuwa fati." Or kama qala alayhi salam in Sahih Muslim. So whoever monopolizes, he is a sinner.
So monopolization is not allowed.
Right? Any type of deceit or uncertainty, a gharar, that's not allowed. Right? So there's this concept where every single transaction should be open, and it should be transparent between the two. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran in Surah An-Nisa, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَأْكُلُوا أَمْوَالَكُمْ بَيْنَكُمْ بِالْبَاطِلِ إِلَّا أَن تَكُونَ تِجَارَةً عَن تَرَاضٍ مِّنْكُمْ. That you, oh, who you believe,
do not eat each other's property
in vain. Right? And the way that a transaction should occur between two people is tijaratan an taradun minkum. That it should be a transaction, you know, trade and bartering, where there is mutual consent between the two parties. Right? So whenever one party is kind of forced into the transaction, or whenever one party is not clear of the stipulations of the transaction, then that transaction is not allowed in Islam.
There should be complete transparency between the two parties of what exactly is going on.
Right? And another example is in debt. That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions in the Quran that whenever two people are contracting a debt transaction, where one person borrows money from another person, that it should be written down very clearly. What are the terms of the debt? You know, how much money, what is the time period of payback, and so on and so forth. That it should be very clear.
Because the principle is, لَا تَظْلِمُونَ وَلَا تُظْلَمُونَ.
That there should be no one in the society who is wronged. There should be no one in the society who wrongs other people. Right? Because the issue is,
now let me take a step back, that
we have all this wealth, and the problem is in that in society, we as human beings, we have free will. Right? We have the ability to act based on our desires, and that is how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created all of us.
Right?
So we have certain needs. You know, everybody needs to eat, everybody needs to drink, everybody needs shelter, a roof over their head, everybody needs clothing, right? Everyone needs to provide for their families.
So these are all needs
that we all have. And we need to fulfill those needs, right? And if there is a person or a family in which their needs are not being fulfilled, then that goes upon the other people in society. That is the responsibility of other people in society, that they give that family or that person or entity the opportunity to fulfill their needs.
So beyond the needs, we have our wants.
Right? We want to enjoy life. We want to have clothing that might be a little bit better. We want to have food that might be a little bit better. We might want to live in an area that's maybe a little bit more than what we need. And there's nothing wrong with that. Right? When we talk about wealth is actually something good. You know, sometimes we think that, oh, you know, having too much wealth or having excess wealth, you know, that's bad. But in fact, it's not so bad. You know, there's a certain limit to how much we can take in, and you know, the responsibilities that a person has, a rich person has in society. But in general, wealth is not evil. In fact, it's a good thing.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions it as khayr, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions it as a fadl. Right? In Surah Al-Jum'ah, for example, فَإِذَا قُضِيَتِ الصَّلَاةُ فَانْتَشِرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ وَابْتَغُوا مِنْ فَضْلِ اللَّهِ وَاذْكُرُوا اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions in Surah Al-Jum'ah that when the Jum'ah Salah is done, then what should you do? You should go out. فَانْتَشِرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. Go and spread out in the earth. وَابْتَغُوا مِنْ فَضْلِ اللَّهِ. And seek out the fadl of Allah. And the Mufassireen, they say that this ayah refers to going out and working. Going out and earning an income. Why? Because the Jews, on their Sabbath day, they're not allowed to work. They can't even drive a car. You see on Saturdays, you see all the Jewish people, they're walking to their synagogues because they can't drive a car. They can't work on Saturdays. But the Orthodox members of the Jewish community, they don't work. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is saying that no, this is a fadl. Earning is a fadl. Earning halal income is a virtue. Spending on our families and our communities is a virtue. So go out and earn money. And earn as much as you can. Because that becomes an asset. Right? It comes in the narrations that Umar radiallahu anhu, during his khilafah, after the Fajr prayer, after Ishraq, he would kick the young people out of the masjid. Like, no, you can't stay here. This is not the time to worship. You have to go out and work. The economy needs you. So if a person is able, if they have a strong body, they have a strong mind, they have to put it to use. Because the Islamic community needs it. We need people to obtain the wealth. We need people to obtain the status. Because especially in a society like this, we need people to go out and get an education. We need our boys and girls to get a good education, to work hard, to earn the money, so that they can give back to the community. Because if everyone just stays in the masjid and becomes a Sufi, that's an issue. Then there's a vacuum there of people who are not working, and that creates a problem for the Muslim community, right? So we can't have everyone in the masjid. Yes, there's a role for people to stay in the masjid, to teach, to practice the sunnah, to tell others how to practice the sunnah. That's definitely a need in the community. But there's also a need for the general population to go out and get a secular education and to work and earn money. And to earn as much money as possible. In a halal way. In a halal way. Right? And another aspect of Islamic economics that's not in capitalism. That's not in capitalism. Is the promotion of wealth distribution. Right? So this is the middle ground. Communism says, ideal communism, that wealth should be distributed equally throughout. That's pure communism. Capitalism says that no, people who earn money, they should keep the money. Right? And this is where you have this concept of laissez-faire, where there should be no regulation on businesses. Right, so a laissez-faire economy is where capitalists, people who invest money, who own the industries, they get to keep all of their wealth to themselves. Right, and the idea is that this is what they call trickle-down economics. That those people who have the wealth, they'll hire everybody and they'll pass down the wages to them. Oftentimes that doesn't happen, but that's the idea. That's the ideal. That's the reason why some economists say that laissez-faire economy might work, because those people with all the wealth, the top, 1%, 5% of the earners, they'll pass on their earnings to the people they employ. But in an ideal capitalistic society, there should be no or very little regulation, right? That the government should not interfere in the businesses of capitalists, meaning that they shouldn't tax them, they shouldn't impose tariffs, right? They shouldn't take money from them. They shouldn't regulate them. They should let them do what they need to do. Now the issue with this, and Islam introduces this because Islam knows, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala knows the nature of human beings. That when a person gains $1 million, then what do they want next?
They want 2 million.
And when they gain 2 million, what do they want? They want 4 million. It never ends. Right? And it comes in a hadith, the Prophet ﷺ says that nothing will fill the stomach of Adam except dirt. Meaning that he will continue to try to gain wealth until he dies. Right? And that is human nature. Capitalism, pure capitalism ignores that fact. You know, the ideal capitalism, it assumes that the top 1%, 5%, that they will be generous enough to distribute that wealth themselves. Right? That eventually the economy will push itself towards the people on the lower end. But oftentimes that doesn't happen. Oftentimes that doesn't happen. So then you get wealth disparity. You know, you have, you know, the top 5% of the country, owning 50%, 60%, 70% of the wealth of the country, while the rest of the 95%, they get left with, you know, just a few percent of the GDP. And that's an issue. So Islam promotes wealth distribution. The first way they do that, Sharia does this, is by zakat. Right? And Islam does it in a very smart way. It doesn't tax, it doesn't put a tax on goods, but it puts a tax on excess wealth. So that promotes business while at the same time it allows the wealth distribution. Meaning that a person who invests money and who has a business, for example, then he will give zakat out of his excess wealth. Right. So then that gets passed on to those people who have less. Another way Islam does this is by promoting and emphasizing the fada'il of sadaqah. And this is in many, many different places in the Quran. And the hadith literature is full of fada'il of sadaqat. You know, giving in charity. Whether it be to masajid, to wukuf, to obviously the people who are less fortunate, orphans, widows, you know, all of these different ways, freeing slaves, for example, all of these different ways of promoting, giving back in wealth. And, you know, one example is that in certain punishments, you know, for example, if a person breaks his oath, if a person accidentally kills somebody, you know, if a person does some other crime, one of the first ways to reprimand oneself or to reconcile that is to give in sadaqah, right? Whether it be to free a slave, whether it be to feed the poor. Right? So in all of these different ways, the Quran, the Sharia, it tries to promote and emphasize the fada'il of sadaqat. And to promote wealth distribution. Right? And also, the Sharia promotes, you know, trying to find ways to get people to become employed. Right? So sitting at home and doing nothing is not an option. Right? Well, I related the story of Umar radiallahu anhu. Right, the Prophet ﷺ would encourage the Sahaba that if they had the ability to go out. For example, one Sahabi asked for advice from the Prophet ﷺ. The Prophet ﷺ said, you know, take an axe, go out into the forest and gather wood if you have to, and sell that wood in the market. That's better for you than to beg. Right? If a person has any type of ability, they should contribute to the economy, to the Muslim economy, right? So, you know, these are the different ways. Oh, and one other way is in forgiveness of debt, right? So if two parties are coming together and one person says that, you know, I want to start a business, or I need some money to because I have some loans. So a person gives the debt, right? But after some point, you know, the lender figures out that the borrower has some difficulty, right? He had some loss in the family, or you know, he had some problem, and he couldn't pay the loan back. So the Sharia in the Quran and Hadith, it mentions that the complete forgiveness of the loan is better for the person. And that's something very difficult to do, right? If you give $5,000 to somebody expecting it back in 2 years, right? Then it's difficult to completely forgive that. But there are many fada'il in doing so, right? So the Quran promotes that forgiveness of debt. And coming back to the issue of interest. So in interest, the issue with that is there's a lot of issues with interest, but one of the things is that there is no share of the risk. Right? So imagine a person who's trying to start a business. Right? They want to start a microphone business, for example. They want to manufacture microphones in a certain society. So they take money, whether it be from a person or an entity like a bank, right? They take a $100,000 loan so that they can bring together the supplies and hire the people and the infrastructure to make microphones. But they figure out that, so they take an interest-bearing loan from the bank, you know, on 10% interest, for example, and they find out that their business is not working out, right? 5 years later, they're, $200,000 in the hole. Right? Now, not only do they have to pay back the bank, but, you know, they have to pay their salaries to the employees, and they have some other back costs. So now, who has the burden? It's all on the person. And the bank, not only do they can they sue to get back that on that person, but they have all this interest. So they get a profit. They get a profit for the economy not working. So that promotes debt in society. So debt becomes a good thing. You know, being bankrupt becomes a good thing for the banks. And they promote that. And so people, in banks, they try to make as many loans as possible. And that creates a bubble. And, you know, if you study the recent economy, you know, that's why we had the housing bubble back in 2008. That was the huge bubble that burst. And before that, we had the tech bubble. You know, every time there'll be bubbles. If you go back to, you know, the 1600s, I forgot what commodity, tulips. In the Netherlands, one of the first bubbles in this type of economy was a tulip bubble. People tried to buy tulips, and then the price of tulips went up, you know, and then it crashed, and that created the tulip bubble. And for some reason, they liked the tulips, the flower. But anyway, so you get this society where every few years you have this bubble, and every few years you have to have this kind of balance between inflation and interest rates, and it creates a whole mess in the society. And that's what we see. That there's so much going on, and there's so much confusion, that it becomes a huge mess. So what Islam says is that no, the risk should be shared by everyone. That if a person is putting in money, then they have to be putting in the risk at the same time. And that's fair for everybody. So instead of interest, we have these other types of contracts. You know, for example, Islamic mortgages and Islamic loans. And, you know, this is a whole other topic, but things like murabaha, mudaraba, musharaka, you have these types of contracts that circumvent the issue of interest. Right? So you have, you spread out the risk between all the parties. Right? And one of the ways that you can see it even in this economy is venture capitalism. So you have venture capitalists that say that, you know, I think this person has a great idea. So I will, you know, I have a lot of money.
that I made through stocks or whatever from my own businesses, I have an excess of $1 million. And I know this person has a great idea. And I know that their idea is going to be, you know, in 10 years it's going to take off. So I will give $1 million to this person so that that can help. Because this person is having a hard time getting a loan from the bank. So there is this, you know, microeconomy even in this day and age. Right? You know, one example in my own field is this company that does molecular testing on tumors, on cancers. So the reason why they are popular now is they started off with this venture capitalism, where people knew that this is going to be a great idea to go out and try to do molecular analysis on everyone's tumors so that they can figure out which tumors are more dangerous than others, or which tumors will respond to certain chemotherapies. Right? So they knew that this is going to be a great idea and we should invest in it. So, you know, they had millions and millions of dollars of venture capitalist money. And that company took off. And now they're the leading company in this field, in molecular diagnostics for tumors. So that economy is there. It's thriving in this society as well. But that, in fact, is what Islam promotes in the first place. Because that's fair for everyone. If this company happens to fail in 5-10 years, then the venture capitalists will also lose their money. But they knew that going in, that this is a risk. But we think that this is a great idea, so we're willing to take that risk. But that's the whole point of Islamic economics, that everyone should be sharing in the risk. Everything should be fair and equal, and the bank should not give predatory loans to other people, and everything should be open and transparent, right? Because what happens in conventional interest in riba is that the banks will profit from people's losses, and then the people that lose, they will lose everything, and they'll have to owe more on top of that, right? So instead of having to owe, you know, give back the $100,000 principal, they'll have to owe $150,000, right? And it'll be difficult for them to pay back because they've lost their business in the first place. Now that they'll have to lose their house, they'll have to lose their car. That debt goes on to their beneficiaries, their spouses, their children. So it becomes a predatory practice. And that's a dhulm upon society. And that restricts society from taking risks going forward, to opening business, to progress in the economy, progress in technology. It puts a huge barrier in that. So that's why Islam says that no, this should not happen. And there should be people in society who are willing to invest, willing to take risk, you know, and willing to be beneficiaries, willing to be compassionate to people who have great ideas, people who are willing to work. Right? So that's why, you know, even in scholarships, it should be a practice amongst Muslims that if we know that there are certain students that are excelling, we should invest in them. Right? We should be able to give them loans or scholarships so that they have the opportunity to educate themselves and to contribute back into society. So, you know, these are basic principles, right? But the underlying principle in Islamic economics, in mu'amilat in general, and even in our mu'ashira, is that we are khulafa of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on this earth. We're given a huge responsibility, and we're giving a large amount of rights on this earth. But that responsibility is that we implement justice on this earth. That we ensure that our family members are taken care of, our neighbors are taken care of, our communities are taken care of, our businesses are fair, our banks are fair, that all the transactions are antaradun minkum.
that everybody is happy. That's what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the loving and merciful Lord. What He wants is that everybody is happy. That no one is taking advantage of each other. لَا تَظْلِمُونَ وَلَا تُظْلَمُونَ Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not want you to oppress others, and He doesn't want you to be oppressed. So if you look at the language, the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala phrases the language of mu'amilat, He wants everybody to be happy. He wants everybody to have an opportunity to have access to the wealth that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given us. He's given us this earth. Right? He's given us the ability to take advantage of the earth. Right? He's given us animals, and people can own the animals. People can take advantage of the animals. The meat, the fur, the milk. Use the animals as rides. You know, the vegetation, the minerals, the metals. We can take advantage of all of this. Right? But we have to do it in a way that's fair, in a way that's open, in a way that's just, so that all of us can live together, عَنْ تَرَاضٍ مِّنْكُمْ, in a way that's mutual, and in a way that everybody is happy. That's what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants on this earth. Right? So we ask that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us tawfiq to learn about the rules of mu'amilat. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give us a tawfiq to treat each other with mutual respect, and give us a tawfiq to enable and enforce justice in this society. وَآخِرُ دَعْوَانَا الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ